hits at 91.2.
All right, the time is 3 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you all, the Eagle FM listeners, and thank you so much, and welcome to this another episode of the Early Morning Scoop, a show that we dive into the economic news update, and of course the trade updates, of course the entrepreneurship, and of course public policy, and I'll be doing that. I'll be giving you all that until the hour of 7:30. I'm Loisa Shimi, and of course this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, before I get into the international news segment, please do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, just to catch up to, on the daily news update. And of course, do not forget to follow our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, LinkedIn, and as well as the Village News Web page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do not forget to download our app, Eagle FM Namibia, or rather Eagle FM app on your Google Play Store, and of course, your App Store, and just stay informed wherever you are. Now, to start off internationally, we are starting in Nigeria, where the price now stands at 835 naira per liter. We're talking about the petrol, and roughly equivalent to 52 US cents. Industry analysts suggest that these aggressive pricing strategy aims to capture market share and cut the cost of imported fuel, and of course apply downward pressure on domestic fuel prices. Now, but consumers are now happy that the oil prices are going down. We might take a listen to this particular update.
In the pricing of petrol in Nigeria, in just 1 week, the privately owned refinery has reduced the ex-depot price of petrol twice. Now, the current price is now 835 naira per liter, which is around 52 US cents. Some industry experts say the refinery's pricing strategy is a calculated effort to gain market share and to also undercut imported fuel and apply downward pressure on domestic fuel prices. Well, CGTN's Deji Bademosi brings us the details from Lagos.
For consumers like Tokumbo Everett, the reduction in petrol price by the Dangote refinery could not be coming at a better time. At a time when his income has been badly eroded by rising inflation, the reduction in the price of petrol means he can still continue to put his car on the road every day.
The only challenge we have is that, please, government regulatory body should please press it upon the marketers to reflect the price. You know, every time Dangote reduces the price, only few of them will reflect it.
Not all the oil marketers actually buy petrol from Dangote. A sizable amount of the petrol consumed in the country is still imported, as local refineries, including the Dangote refinery, are yet to meet local consumption with their production. But there's no question that the price reductions by the Dangote refinery is putting pressure on imported petrol.
I think primarily it's lower crude prices. If your cost is reduced, you generally want to pass that on. But that's together with competition. A number of people are still importing finished products, and he wants to remain competitive. I think it could also be a trade war of sort, or fighting over consumers.
The price reduction is also coming at a time when the government announced the renewal of its Naira for crude deal with the Dangote refinery.
If Dangote has to fast fetch for dollar also to compete to get FS and then bring it into, then you would have seen that we wouldn't enjoy what we are enjoying now. So basically what is happening now, as long as the price of crude oil goes down, international market, definitely the price of refined petroleum product will go down.
But while the petrol price drop is good news for consumers, the government is seriously worried about the fall in crude oil price.
So happy, of course, as consumers of the derivatives of crude pricing, that the price is coming low. But when we look at globally as a nation, it's not good for our economy, because our revenue inflow is also impacted. If the crude oil price, like what happened previous week, Fridays ago, where it dropped in one day from about $74, $73 a barrel to $60. You can see that in terms of our production, of crude oil, our revenue is impacted severely.
If global crude prices continue to remain low, there's a likelihood of more price reduction in the coming weeks. And that's...
All right, there you have it. Now, moving on, last week's talk in the United Kingdom aimed at resolving Sudan's ongoing conflicts ended without a breakthrough, leaving many stakeholders disappointed. However, experts following the crisis remain optimistic, suggesting that global actors still have a crucial role to play in breaking the deadlock and, of course, supporting a path toward the peace. We might take a lesson.
Egypt and Saudi Arabia support the army, while Sudanese officials accuse the United Arab Emirates of arming the RSF, which the UAE denies.
Some reports indicated that the UAE supports the RSF, but the UAE officially denied that. Egypt supports the Sudanese military and is committed to that. Russia and Ukraine are also heavily involved in expanding their conflicts to Sudan. Kenya supports the RSF. Eritrea supports the Sudanese army. The war in Sudan is a regional conflict. It's a very complicated issue where domestic rivalry has merged with regional ones.
The reason for this international interest is Sudan's natural resources. It is rich in oil, minerals, and famous for its fertile land. It is one of Africa's largest gold producers, and the RSF controls most of these mines.
When President Omar al-Bashir was in power, the nation's allies were the first in line to benefit from Sudan's riches. But after his regime fell in 2021, there is now opportunity for new players to get involved.
This month, the RSF announced it will create its own parallel government, which only deepens the conflict. Experts insist, however, that one of the ways forward is for international organizations to lead reconciliation efforts.
Three parties: the League of Arab States, the United Nations, and the African Union. Those are three components who co-sponsor negotiations in order to restore peace and security to the whole Sudan. The people of Sudan are looking for rapid solution to this problem. They have suffered a lot.
13 million Sudanese people have been displaced so far, and tens of thousands killed. Yet the war between the Sudanese army and the RSF has now entered its third year.
But what is the way forward? Egypt believes that an experienced and unified military is the only way to achieve Sudan's stability and avoid territorial division. Others believe that the RSF must be included into official security roles. But if the guns are not silenced, none of these tracks are possible, and Sudan may find itself once again on a path towards division.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is just the judgment has been reserved in the Western Cape High Court in the matter dealing with the VAT hike, just 8 days before the 0.5 percentage point increase is due to kick in. Now, the court made an undertaking that it will come back to the affected parties by the 29th of this month. We might take a listen to this particular bit.
Seeking temporary relief to suspend the pending VAT hike. The DA argued that Section 74 of the VAT Act gives the Finance Minister too much power. Lawyers for Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana disagree. Parliament's lawyer says the institution followed all due process which led up to the vote in favour of the adoption of the Fiscal Framework Report on the 2nd of April. Now, to talk about the DA's legal challenge against the VAT, we're joined by its national spokesperson, Karabo Gagau. Good evening, Karabo. Thank you very much for joining us on the program. So today, your urgent matter was indeed on the VAT hike, was indeed heard. Just talk us through the main argument around the procedural irregularities that you maintain took place at the committee meeting ahead of that budget vote.
Dumela Osimfundo, thank you so much for having me, and good evening to your SABC viewers. So the procedural irregularity that we've identified as the Democratic Alliance has to do with the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. committee meeting that took place at Parliament, a joint committee meeting, the Select Finance Committee of both houses of the National Assembly as well as the National Council of Provinces. You'd know that the mandate of that committee would have been to consider the fiscal framework, either to put a stamp on it, to approve it as is, or to make an amendment to it. So as for the question on whether or not the fiscal framework is going to be adopted or not, the question there from the chairperson remains naked and the process to be followed clearly for as far as the members of that committee is concerned is still a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
So there was confusion altogether on what was considered. But also you would know that the draft committee report that was considered in that meeting is not the same report that was tabled before Parliament, particularly because post the adjournment of that meeting, there were amendments still that were made to the report, which meant that the final version was not voted for by that committee and that consideration didn't take place. So ultimately, then the tabulation of a committee report that served in both houses of Parliament, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, was not that which was voted for. So the basis upon which these two houses voted for the fiscal framework or the consideration of the report was flawed.
Mm.
And that's part of the problem that we had.
Mm. I want to come back. Pardon me for interjecting there. I'm going to come back to the final version that was voted on, but I just want to take you back to the other aspects that you were challenging, which are the finance minister's powers. Just talk to that. Talk to us about just that specific one.
So the Democratic Alliances of the FIB believe that the powers are in breach of the Constitution, that there's a constitutional irregularity there. So the current provision of Section 7.4 of the VAT Act empowers the minister to make a declaration on a VAT increase without the consideration of Parliament. The reason why we're saying that this is a problem is because there is only one house that has one house of the three spheres of government that has the constitutional power to impose taxes for revenue collection. And that arm of state is the legislative arm of state. Nationally, that is Parliament. Provincially, that is the provincial legislatures. Locally, it is the municipal councils. It is not the executive. However, the way Section 7.4 of the Constitution is currently written gives an executive arm of state to which on a national level would be the minister, provincially the MEC, and on a local level the MNC, the power to do so without the consideration of Parliament. And we're arguing that this is wrong. We do have a case study of a case that was before court before that was ruled on that proves that we are right. The example there is quickly of this province in the past where there was a case with the then MEC as well as the casino association, where the casino association mandated the MEC to tax the people of that province.
Mm-hmm. Karabo, then now to that final version.
Money for revenue collection. And the court upheld that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me, I just couldn't hear you there for a moment. But then to the final version of the report that was presented before Parliament, and more specifically, the inclusion of those non-binding recommendations of the 30 days to come up with alternative revenue sources. In his affidavit, in his answering affidavit, the finance minister says he has never suggested that he could revoke the implementation of the VAT increase as it stands right now, which to us almost suggests that the action as a non-binding recommendation to come up with that alternative revenue source was never going to work.
That is true. So that's why we've maintained that Action SA remained the April Fools of the year, particularly because there are only two processes that can be followed to amend a fiscal framework or to revoke it as it currently stands. One, the Finance Committee would have to, the Select Committee of Finance would have to amend the fiscal framework, which they did not do in this case. Or two, there would have to be an opposing act that needs to be proposed by Parliament to judge against the act of a VAT increase altogether. So that did not happen, and that's why our argument was clear, that recommendations are not legally binding. So when Action SA in committee said that they are in favor of fiscal framework on condition that there is no VAT, that meant nothing. All that meant was that the minister had to note and then flip the page and move forward altogether. It had no binding. But my network was against what I was arguing.
All right, there you have it, listeners. The time is 18 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that over 100 leaders of American tertiary institutions have signed into a joint statement opposing what it termed unprecedented government overreached and, of course, political interference by the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump. Now, the statement was released a day after Harvard University sued a bloc president, Trump, from freezing billions of dollars in federal funding after it rejected a list of White House's demand that it urges would undermine its independence. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Students, among other demands, including seeking information on the institution's foreign ties and faculty. Harvard has since sued the Trump administration in an effort to block the funding freeze, calling it unlawful and beyond the government's authority.
Everyone was looking to see who would be the first universities to stand up to the Trump administration. And I'm really, really heartened that it is Harvard, one of the nation's oldest institutions, certainly one of the most well-endowed, with, you know, a lot of, frankly, political connections. I mean, this could be a game changer in terms of saving the sector. University Office of the President's taking a very different stance. They're saying, look, we have taken very, very strong stances and positions to curb what you might perceive as being anti-Semitism on our campus. We do not think that what you're doing is lawful, and we will not allow the federal government to essentially decide what happens on university campuses.
The Trump administration has since also paused some funding to universities, including Columbia, Cornell, Princeton, and Brown, among others. Trump here asked why he was considering changing Harvard's tax-exempt status.
It's a disgrace. I think what they did was a disgrace. They're obviously anti-Semitic, and all of a sudden they're starting to behave. But when you see where they, what they were saying, what they were doing, when you see the way they took care of events, when you watch that woman, that horrendous president that ruined the image of Harvard, maybe permanently, in Congress, in the halls of Congress, when you take a look at what happened there, it was horrific.
The Harvard community titled Upholding Our Values and Defending Our University, the institution's president, Alan Garber, who is Jewish, vowed to fight hate with the urgency it demands, but that the government's funding freeze would put in jeopardy critical research into children's cancer, infectious disease outbreaks, and Alzheimer's, among others.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that President William Ruto is expecting to engage in discussions focusing significantly on a variety of critical matters, including trade agreements, infrastructure development, and regional security concerns. Now, the visit marks a significant step in strengthening these ties between the two nations. We might take a lesson.
And Kenya established diplomatic relations in 1963. During the colonial era, China supported Kenya's struggle for independence. The two countries emphasized principles of sovereignty, mutual respect, and non-interference in domestic affairs, which promoted mutual understanding. 60 years on, the relations have transformed and evolved into a comprehensive strategic partnership.
The people-to-people relationship between Kenya and China goes beyond our bilateral relations. Our bilateral relations starts from the 60s, but the people-to-people relations is 600 years old. when the first Chinese visited Kenya.
Key projects like the Standard Gauge Railway, built under China's Belt and Road Initiative, have reduced cargo transit times, increased trade between Kenya and neighboring nations, and boosted tourism in the country. The 27-kilometer elevated Nairobi Expressway, built by the China Road and Bridge Corporation, has reduced travel time between Kenya's Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, the Nairobi Central Business District, and some key suburbs of the Kenyan capital. In the agricultural sector, Kenya has emerged as one of the top suppliers of avocados to China, capitalizing on a rapidly growing demand. This expanded market has empowered many Kenyan farmers through increased earnings. In 2019, Kenya was granted enhanced market access to China, a move that boosted the flour export sector. For many flour farmers, the expanded access into the Chinese market has facilitated easier trade routes and reduced barriers, giving the horticultural sector a timely boost. In education, China has established the Confucius Institute at the University of Nairobi, promoting the learning of the Chinese language by many Kenyans and facilitating cultural exchanges.
I am looking forward to building on what already exists, to build greater understanding between our two peoples and ensuring that we take this into the future.
President William Ruto's visit to China is expected to further cement China's role as Kenya's leading trading partner.
All right, there you have it. The time is 25 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is still early morning scoop. Now to move on is that the government that's now in Zambia, the government has engaged academic institutions and in international partners to find innovation ways to reduce the cost of making feed. Now, Fisheries and Livestock Minister Peter Kapala says innovation and scientific evidence are key in increasing production in the fisheries and, of course, livestock sector. So we might take a listen to this.
Livestock Minister Peter Kapala, he is here in Eastern Province to check on the performance of the fisheries and livestock subsectors. During his visit, the minister reiterated government's commitment to investing in research and development in fisheries to address challenges facing the sector.
Research into fish production is critical so that we can scale up the nutrition requirement of our people. So we are going to move and push forward to ensure that research into fish production is enhanced. In the next year's budget, we are critically going to deliberately allocate more money to fishery, research production.
And Chief Kapichila of Lundazi District has pledged to work with government in implementing various programs aimed at uplifting the living standards of people in his area.
The president, what I think, I think a decision, board decision, that he invested in the economy. I think that it is a super.
Meanwhile, Eastern Province Fisheries Officer Edgar Kavete says there's need to increase fingering production as the demand is increasing.
The number of the farmers keeps increasing year by year due to interventions the government has brought in place. So we wish to go into production of the improved species of Orochromis and Asonai, the fish that the province is mandated to propagate and promote.
With growing challenges of expensive fish feed and lack of fingering, science and innovation is expected to provide long-term solutions and drive sustainable growth for Zambia's food systems.
All right. And now, lastly, on the international segment is that the World Earth Day was celebrated whereby renewable energy could give us more energy. That's according to one of the analysts or professor in this regard. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Stay with that story now. Jaco Folschenk, Associate Professor in Strategy and Sustainability at Stellenbosch University, or Stellenbosch Business School, rather, joins us now. Thank you so much, Prof, for your time. So citizens across the globe in that clip that we've just listened to have been called on to unite around renewable energy in order to triple clean electricity production by 2030. I want to stay with that point. Let's start by talking then about South Africa's unique big role, you know, when we speak about renewable energy, options like solar and wind, etc., on this Earth Day?
Thanks, Nadine. Thanks for having me. Well, I think solar and wind can play a major role in South Africa. I think we've got some of the, well, I don't think, I know, we've got some of the best solar resources in the world. Together with Namibia, I think we kind of at the top of the hit list in those. And also around the coast of South Africa, we've got some of the best resources in terms of wind. If you think of Coha, for instance, I think one of the capacity factors there, that's how many days of the year the wind blows, it's some of the highest in the world. So I think we've got immense capacity in South Africa, and with renewable energy being cheaper than coal energy, and then I'm talking about new capacity, so if we want to build a new coal plant, which we shouldn't be doing anyway, but renewable energy is already much cheaper than those options. So there's vast opportunity for South Africa to exploit those resources that we have that will bring about job creation, but not only that. You know, we've known that when we had blackouts, what impact that has on the economy. So having more renewable energy, having less reliance on things like coal, et cetera, could give us more energy security. And, of course, we need more renewable energy then to achieve that. But it can play a major role if we can do that, and something that can be very, very positive for us to have on Earth Day, to have something that can solve climate change, that can address some of the other environmental issues that are associated with coal, and at the same time also have social needs met, like job creation, economic growth, etc.
And Prof, of course, you've written an article recently that raises some very key points about radical optimism as a key survival strategy. And in fact, you go on to list that despite the enormity of the challenges, key victories around the globe prove the collective action can and does work. Just speak to us a little bit about that in terms of what you mean by perhaps, you know, turning those challenges into opportunities.
Well, certainly. I think firstly, let's start with radical optimism. That, you know, what we've seen from various studies that we've done is that people respond to hope. And by spending Earth Day, you know, wallowing in pain and guilt about the things.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression.
Things that are going wrong in the world actually sends the wrong message, and it while it may create headlines, hope comes from good news. And if we want people to act, we need to create these stories. So what we did in this press release that you referred to is to celebrate some of the small wins. Things like, you know, the deforestation in the Amazon has been halved in 2023. We still have deforestation, and that's part of this optimism view, is let's not disregard the facts, but let's look at what are the things that are going wrong. And certainly halving deforestation. There are more than 130 countries in the world that have said they will conserve more than 30% of the land in those countries, which means there's a substantial move towards conservation, biodiversity. In South Africa, we've got vast biodiversity resources, and we attract so many tourists to Cape Town, to the Kruger Park, to Mthulozi, all these different parks that we have in South Africa, and we should celebrate nature. We should celebrate what we have in terms of biodiversity. And I think it's really the message is that what we're trying to say is that with this Earth Day, let's celebrate the positive things that are happening. Let's celebrate the progress that we've made, and that enables us to move forward and have people, you know, be galvanized by this idea and move forward.
And how do we then begin to, you know, unearth those stories firstly and, you know, pass on that narrative, especially when you look at, you know, rural communities and the role they play in shaping this hopeful climate story? I mean, there are plenty there, but at the same time, keeping those that need to be kept, you know, responsible, accountable.
I think certainly, you know, that's a great question. I think firstly, on the question of communities, we know, for instance, that renewable energy is distributed jobs. When you talk about the coal fields and coal power, it's really concentrated and people grow ill because of the fumes, etc. in those areas. With renewable energy, it's much more distributed. How we distribute these good stories? Well, I think, you know, part of that is to the media, but I think also as news creators, we are sometimes guilty. Certainly myself, as a semi-academic environmentalist, tend to tell students how bad things are, and sometimes you can see from the reaction people kind of shy away from that. By focusing on the positive stories, so we as news creators...
All right, the time is 34 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and of course that was, or that marks the end of our international news. We can take a listen to a very short commercial break, then once we return, we can take you through the economic and local news update. Do not go away.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica.
Welcome back. The time is 35 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And if you just joined us right now, thank you so much for joining us, and a very, very good morning to you once more. Now, to start off, we want to start off with one of the story from our today's newspaper. Please do not forget to subscribe to our newspaper, or rather to just... To ask for the newspaper, you can do that through sending or by sending your detail. That's include your number, your email to 081-241-44. That's a number you can save, please. And you can able to get the newspaper every day's release. That's now Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, to start off is our Deputy Minister for Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, Ruthie Masake, says the ministry will prioritize the full operationalism of green schemes for the next 5 years. Now, this part of its strategy focus for the 2025 to 2030 period. Now, this is aiming to increase food production and create employment opportunity. Now, Masake made the announcement during a strategy and engagement workshop held at Swakopmund Hotel and Entertainment Center on Tuesday. Now, Namibia has 11 green schemes project with an aim to diversify domestic agricultural production and contribute to food security. Now, she emphasized that all public enterprises, commissions, advisory councils and agencies under the ministry's portfolio across the sectors of agriculture, water, fisheries and land reforms are expected to conduct a comprehensive review and alignment of their strategic and business plans. Now, this alignment, she said, will be guided by the ministry's new strategic plan. Now, the Directorate of Planning and Business Development must actively lead to the streamlining of institutional plans and execution framework to ensure strategic optimal impact and, of course, a prudent use of resources, she said. Now, she also included advising the minister of the allocation of fishing quotas, and Masaki also called on institutions to eliminate duplication and inefficiencies, stressing the importance of ensuring that every Namibian dollar invested yield maximum developmental returns. Now, outlining the framework of the strategic plan, Masaki stated that both the five-year strategic plan, the 2025 to 2026 annual work plan must be aligned with national development priorities under the 6th National Development Plan, that's NDP-6, among others. Now, I therefore called on every single management official here today to commit to excellence, accountability, and of course, responsibility. Now, that what he said, I mean, she said. And the deputy minister issued a steam warning against corruption in any form, including procurement, recruitment, land, and fishery quotas allocations and service delivery, saying it undermines justice and public trust, and of course, deprives the most vulnerable opportunities. Now, corruption should be banned, and it destroys trust and steals from those who need that or the help from them. That was what he said, or rather added there. So now to move on to the next item is that the Ondangwa Town Council and Coastech Ondangwa signed a memorandum of understanding to strengthen cooperation in vocational training and youth empowerment. Now the agreement set out the terms for collaboration between the two institutions with a focus on providing job attachment and community-based employment opportunities for Coastech trainees. Now, Chief Executive Officer Ismail Namuongo of the Ondangwa Town Council, who spoke at the signing event, stressed that community engagement and cooperation are key components for their strategic plan. Now, the role for these Coastech plays in the economy and development of this town cannot be ignored. That what he said, they have been here. They are here and they will continue to be here. So it is our institution and it is our responsibility to assist and encourage them to do more, expand their services for the benefit of the youth. That's what Namuongo stated. We might take a listen to what he has to say more on this.
The town council has been going through a lot of changes and a lot of transformation on how we do business and how we forge ahead in recent years, especially after launching our five-year strategic plan in 2022. So we've been doing a lot of this transformation and a lot of changes within our operation. This we do because of realizing the changing environment in which we are operating, the changing environment in which Coastech is operating. So we have been transforming the way we do things and the way to adapt to the environment in which we are operating in. So we should not be a static council. We should embrace change. And we should incorporate innovation in all our daily activities in order to answer to the changing environment in which we are operating. The town council of yesteryears should not be the same as the town council of today because we are operating in a changing environment. One of our pillars within our five-year strategic plan talked about collaborations, talk about community collaboration and community involvement in all what we do. And as a council, I believe this is one of the pillars that has brought us here this morning, because it's responding toward collaborating with the community and involving community in all our activities on a daily basis. And I'm very much delighted to be forging this collaboration with one of our strongest institutions of higher learning here in Ondangwa, the Community Development Center. And these are the success that we need really as a community of Ondangwa to be thankful, as a community of Ondangwa to upload ourselves for this kind of collaborations. We believe and that the roles that COSDEC is playing within the economy, COSDEC is playing in the development of this town, it cannot be ignored. They have been here. COSDEC has been here. COSDEC is here. And COSDEC will continue to be here within our community. So the roles that they are playing cannot really be ignored.
All right, Namuongo also further stated that the council has competent craftsmen, engineers, and experienced administrators, making it proper for them to enter into this deal. Now, this collaboration will allow those authorities to share and pass their skills and experiences to students at COSDEC Ondangwa, which he believes is the best course of action. We might take a listen to this update.
It's high time that we, as community of Ondangwa, collaborate with strong institutions such as COSDEC if we are to realize true community development within this town. It's our institution and it's our responsibility as a town council to assist and to encourage them to do more and expand their services for the benefit of this community. This little step that we are taking today is just one of the many collaborations that our two institutions are going to collaborate on. Mr. Kantukwata over here has talked about, has given us examples of collaborations that they have already with other municipalities such as the Swakopmund municipalities. Why can't we do it here? Why can't we collaborate with them in more other community initiatives here? We have a lot of community initiatives that, of course, I'm thankful to COSDEC Ondangwa. They have been joining us in council activities. But why can't we formalize it? And this is now the day that we are going to formalize all our relationship for the benefits of the two institutions. The government, maybe before I go to the government, is that at council, at the town council, we've got qualified artisans, a lot of them. We've got engineers. We've got experienced administrators. Why can't we use those skills and experiences and pass them on to the students that are here for the benefit of our community? It can be done. And this is the start that we are starting today here, so that we transfer the knowledge, we transfer the experiences that we have to the students. The students are here. Why can't we use them for our benefits? The government has called upon public institutions, institutions such as town council, to make considerations and budgetary provisions within our budgets to enhance and to cater for things such as student attachments and so forth. And this is the right time that we are signing this agreement, that we can also make provisions for such activities that is being encouraged by government. At town council, we have already started with this, and as we are speaking, we have got students from Varambora Vocational Training Center that are on board, that we are sponsoring with Namibia Training Authority. And they are busy. I think they should be in their final year by this current year. doing their courses there in Ongodiva. Why can't we extend the same services to COSDEC here in our doorstep here? Things that we can do, and these things that are being encouraged by our government. So, Director, ceremony, we have, in conclusion, I would like to express really my sincere hope, that this memorandum of understanding between our two institutions will be fully implemented as planned. Nobody else will come from somewhere else to come and fully implement it. It's us here at this table that should implement this agreement fully from COSDEC side.
All right, there you have it. Moreover, the executive manager of COSDEC, Pavo Twilika Kamutukwata, stated that Ondangwa COSDEC is one of the 9 centers that provide technical and vocational education training that is delivered across Namibia's 8 regions. Now we might take a listen to this.
Morning will initiate the process to a new state of progressive affairs. It is indeed a good morning at Ondangwa COSDEC. Ondangwa COSDEC is part of 9 centers providing TVET technical and vocational education training across Namibia in 8 regions. We have a total number of 1,512 trainees registered for the 2025 year in Namibia, of which 274 are registered at Ondangwa COSDEC, which makes them the highest populated center among all COSDEC centers in Namibia. And they are followed closely by Tukurenu COSDEC, which is in Rundu, that has a population of 260 trainees. As a TVET provider, with the support and guidance of our stakeholders such as the NTA, the National Training Authority, the NQA, the Ministry of Education, Arts, Education, Youth, Sport, Arts and Culture, NASFAF, and the support institutions with vested interest in what we do here at COSDEC Ondangwa. That includes now the regional council as well as local authority. We have committed to solidify our efforts to collaborate in ensuring that we are impactful to our communities. This morning, we will witness the signing of a document that will provide guidance to our collaboration in line with our strategic plan 2025 to 2029. COSDEC remain committed to providing much needed skills to our underserved community members to ensure that they gain the required knowledge and skills to create employment and an income for themselves, as well as for them to be employable and to subsequently improve their living conditions as well as that of their communities. On this pathway, this morning, we will solidify our partnership with the Ondangwa Town Council to cement our collaboration in the following areas: internship opportunities for our trainees, capacity building for Ondangwa Town Council staff members with tailor-made short training programs, participating in Ondangwa Town Council initiated expos, trade fairs, and related exhibitions, participation in the construction of social housing projects and related projects in the town council jurisdiction, to jointly advocate for the community to make use of the training opportunities offered by Ondangwa COSDEC. Dear ladies and gentlemen, we are excited and would like to reiterate that the Ondangwa COSDEC is meant to serve you. It is thus imperative upon all of us to ensure that we collectively support the management of this center. with our unique expertise to ensure that the trade offerings remain relevant. I also should indicate to you that the Swakopmund COSDEC, with the support of the Swakopmund municipality, has a project on solar energy that can be replicated with the Ondawa Town Council, should the concept be accepted and be able to be adapted to the uniqueness of Ondangwa and its needs. In conclusion, I would like to echo our absolute commitment to the objectives of the MOA.
All right, there you had it. Maybe just taking note where we what we can take from their statement or the speech of Mr. Pavo there is that he just noted that they have a total of 1,512 trainees registered for 2025 in Namibia, whereas 274 of those are registered at the Ondangwa COSDEC, which has the highest number of trainees, followed closely by the Tukurenu COSDEC in Rundu. That what he said. Now to move on, the chairperson of COSDEC Ondangwa, Panduleni Wahengo, highlighted the importance of this memorandum of understanding. We might take a lesson, or rather, this agreement.
This occasion marks a significant milestone in our collective toward sustainable development, demonstrating a power of collaboration in fostering growth and progress within our communities. The signing of a memorandum of understanding between Ondangwa Town Council and COSDEC Ondangwa is a statement to our shared commitment to strengthening ties through good neighborhood and mutual development. Through this partnership, we pave the way for innovation solutions in vocational trainings, skill development, and community empowerment, ensuring that our young people and aspiring professionals are equipped with the tools necessary to strive in a rapidly evolving world. As COSDEC Ondangwa, we believe that partnerships such as this are the foundation upon which a prosperous future is built by working together, sharing resources, and uniting our visions. We unlock new opportunities for social and economic advancement. This collaboration is not just about agreement on paper, but it is about creating lasting impact, shaping lives, and fostering an environment where education and training meet real-world needs. We are deeply grateful to Ondangwa Town Council for the unwavering support and the dedications to development. Likewise, I extend my sincere appreciation to our dedicated COSDEC team, stakeholders, and all those who continue to champion vocational training as a pillar of transformation. Let this MOU be the beginning of an inspiring journey, one that strengthens bonds, builds capacity, and leads us toward a future filled with promise and prosperity. Thank you and welcome once again to this remarkable event.
All right, there you had it. Now the time is 56 minutes in the 6 o'clock and this is early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, and once we return, we can also take you through the more of the update of today until the hour of 7:30. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
Buck your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite the nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically,
The time is 58 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. Now to move on to the next item.
Yes, on the next item, President Tumbonandi Ndaitwa stated that only individuals whose fields were damaged by floods will qualify for government drought relief support. Now, Tumbonandi Ndaitwa made those remarks during a visit to relocation centers in the Omsati, Oshana, Ohangwena region on Saturday. Now, on this, we are joined by a farmer that is now Hausiku Johannes, just to discuss what he has to say about this decision. A very good morning to you, Mr. Johannes, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning to you also, and thank you for having me.
I appreciate you so much. Mr. Hausiku, as a farmer, what are your thoughts on the president's decision?
Okay, thank you very much again. And that is a very critical question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though that I will just talk a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, regarding the feeling and the challenge that we are really experience as farmers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know this year we receive a good rainfall,
mm-hmm.
but that good rainfall and other part it causes flooding because of heavy rain.
Mm-hmm.
Then we know a heavy rain always it can also result in a bad impact to the crops.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the crop cannot grow well, or sometimes the crop can be flooded.
Mm-hmm.
Then it cannot manure to bear a good yield,
mm-hmm.
like the way we expected with a normal rainfall.
Okay.
Yeah, so far, I cannot give exactly that. How do we feel regarding that?
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion on that,
mm-hmm.
before maybe the High Excellence President Nemene Tumbo and maybe come to a final conclusion,
mm-hmm.
first I'm requesting the Office of the Prime Minister,
mm-hmm.
first to do a pre-survey so that they can fund it in all the regions, whether this year the government cannot continue supporting drought relief program.
If
we find that maybe, yes, most of the farmer
mm-hmm.
have something to eat their own, then they can declare that program that they cannot going to continue with drought relief.
Mm-hmm.
But first they need to come up with a study and finding whether finding at the ground, they can come to all our constituents in Namibia. We are having 121 constituents.
Okay.
If they can come there, then they can do findings. Then they see, okay, now maybe people they can expect a good harvest.
Mm-hmm.
especially for the grain, because we are mostly here in the northeastern regions. We are mostly depending on cereal crops. I'm referring mahangu and maize. Yeah, if maybe people, they have been harvested enough, or we produce enough so that they can take us for the next rain season. Then if they can see like that, then they can consider another another platform where they can assist farmers.
On that, perhaps what maybe farming practices would you maybe share with other farmers just to help ensure that they produce enough food for their families?
Yeah, mostly we are encouraging local farmers to do conservation agriculture. In short, we call CA, because conservation agriculture is the most one, so that you can, even like a little lane that you can receive, you can make a living, or you can have some production.
And now, maybe while you are on there, sorry for interjecting you, how does it work then? Maybe just
Conservation agriculture is the way when we are using a reaper, when we are doing a soil tillage, we can use a reaper. If you can go to various ABC centers where you can ask, I want to see a reaper plow, then they can show you. That reaper plow is the one that the best for our off regions. And for the northern eastern regions, starting from the four regions, the Katuk, the Tukavangos, and the Baby, if we can use those system of plowing, we can produce. And the second one, also we needed to do, we migrate from, depending from the rainfed, also we needed to do irrigation, like irrigation farming, so that we can increase food. That is my two encouragement that I really focus on whenever we are discussing with even the rural water supply or even the government. That is our position that we want. Maybe in the future, the government needed to venture or to support on that mechanisms. The other that I wanted to do, I see we are not harvesting water. Namibia is a semi desert country. We need the government needed to do more regarding water. As we know, water is life for everyone. And we cannot only provide water like borehole for drinking, like for human being and the animals. And in other way, we need also to have water that we can irrigate a crop for food security. That is the main that the government need to tackle, so that they can come up with even a dam. Like this year, we receive a lot of water, even flooding. That water, if we could harvest it, and that water, by this year, we can even irrigate more food during winter time, winter crop, and also it can take us even to the next rain season, where we can even produce more. Whether it's with wheat or even maize, and even in mahangu, if we can irrigate, then we can produce so that we can have our self-sufficient as a country, food self-sufficient.
To share as a farmer, how can maybe we effectively harvest this water for future use, especially now in the northern area?
We can, practically an example that I can give is the same like Hardap Dam.
Okay.
Or Nekeltal Dam that was constructed by the government through the Ministry of Agriculture, Fishery and Water and Land Reform. If they can continue expand those dam like the one in the south, that can be even the central north regions, EA, because we are also receiving, and we have inland, inland areas, like where you cannot find water. But those inland areas, if we can drill construct a big dam, then we can set up canals where those water can flow up to that dam. Then we can also prevent flooding And also in other way we are harvesting this water for future use.
As a chairperson of a cooperative within a union in your Kavango West region, your observation, your research, how are these people doing? The present statement of saying that only those that are affected by flood will benefit from the government support or drought relief. How is the overall of the Kavango West region?
Yeah, I cannot say yes or no.
Okay.
But I can just say it's too early to determine whether the state of our farmers in the region can be positive this year. Unless if the Ministry of Agriculture through the collaboration of the office of the Prime Minister, because every year they used to do
assessment
to see whether the farmers did they produce. If they can say yes, when they come to the ground, the farmers they really produce is when they can cancel the program for a drought relief program to the locals. My second comment on that again. Even though they know that during the last 2 years, we experienced persist drought. Yeah, most of the farmers, they did not have even certified seed so that they can plant by themselves. The government need to still do more, even though this year we can say it's a good year where we receive enough water, enough rain, a good rain, but it was a challenge there for beginning in terms of planting because there is no seed.
Okay.
Yeah, like we did not have enough seeds, then also it will be a challenge. The other point on that, the support for reaping services to the side of the ministry, it's still a song. It's not meeting all the farmers. The government needed to come up with a mechanism to help the farmer in terms of input, fertilizers, and also reaping services. Because it's still a challenge. Most of the farmers, they are not been assisted in terms of reaping, even though there's a program under Directorate of Engineering, Agriculture, Research, and this TAPIS. There's a program, but that program, I'm not saying it will cover all the farmers. Still, maybe I can estimate 20% only to cover to the farmers. The rest 80% the farmers are not yet covered. The government needed to do more on that so that food security is very important. Because if there is no farmers, there is no life and there is no future. Once the farmer has been empowered, then the country can have a better future because we are producing our own food. Even the price of food in the shop can be go down because we have our own food. Yes.
Thank you so much, Mr. Joannes, for that.
Welcome.
All right.
There you have it, listeners. And of course, so what we can take out there is that he suggested that at least the Office of the President should also contact the throughout investigation on the ground to see how is, or whether to get the findings, whether or not people are going to get the drought relief or not. And of course, once he said that maybe once they confirm all the constituencies involved, they can maybe proceed with that decision to provide drought relief specifically just to the affected individuals. Now, to move on to the next item, we also spoke to one of the farmers on this regard, just to also to share their thoughts.
We need to update ourselves always because life is a spectrum. Where you are today is not where you will be tomorrow. So, and if you are not like putting yourself, if you are not like making yourself to look ahead, somehow, somewhere, life will threaten you. Is that a statement from the president that it's only those people who are affected by that disaster, flood disaster, only those people are going to get food relief this year? It can't do it. It can't do it because, you know, a lot of people, especially youth nowadays, they really just want to be dependent. They just want to be given everything, even the bread that they can use to eat. They just want to be given. And from that statement, for me, I'm supporting it. Because, you know, if you are working with rich people, you cannot go anywhere. And you cannot get life again. Those people, they were just electing things that might be this year to be just like the last year. We cannot receive enough rainfall. You cannot get life. And now those people, they are being disappointed because they were saying like, no, we're just going to eat, whether I wake or not, I just need to eat. Now the sun is from the north to south. It's no more like from the other side.
Okay.
So, for real, I'm very much happy for that.
Okay.
Because people, they just want to be given everything. Even though they have the chance to do something, they will just elect things that the government will provide.
So, on this, while you are there, sorry for interjecting you, like, do you think that perhaps this should be a lesson?
It is a lesson. It's an encouragement.
Okay.
It's a motivational, like we don't need to depend on someone, we need to do things for ourselves. So like for real, it's a lesson, and those people who are seeking something that government will provide, now they are going to suffer enough, and from that suffering, they are going to learn a lesson that, okay, next year I'll try all by me. When they say, oh, there's a way. If you have a will to do something, no matter how hard it is, you will get away. So, especially for us Namibian, what we need to do, we don't need to make agriculture as a seasonal thing. Because we eat each and every season. This means of producing just during rain season, it must get to an end because we never know. Life, I mentioned something of life is a spectacle. You never know. Okay. If we happen to keep this mandate, which we can only provide when this rainfall, how about if we have 4 to 3 years without getting rain? We need to wake up.
Okay.
Honestly, we need to wake up. And the tactic that I use for me to find myself at that level, it's my mindset. You just need to fix your mind. And you must know what is needed in the world. And you must know how you produce it. That's only the way.
Okay.
And honestly, that's only the way. And my way to farmers, I will not feel tired of mentioning life. Farming is life.
Okay.
Whatever you see in this world, it's for farming. So we can produce anything. It's not really that you need to produce what I produce. Because we have a lot of things to produce anyway. So we just need to open our mind, and we just need to put this idea in our mind that it's only by food we can survive. Without food, then I don't know where are we going to find ourselves.
Okay.
Those are my simple words to the farmers and to the country at large.
Thank you so much, Mr. Aso, for having you today.
Thank Thank you very much.
All right.
There you heard it from a farmer, Hassel Nyipewa. He agreed with the decision about what that was made by the president, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, to say that, I mean, only the affected individuals will benefit from the drought relief this year. So there, Nyipewa or Hassel said that at least this could be a learning lesson for those that didn't also work today, at least to also encourage them for next year to do their best and also just start working in their fields. So now that what he said. Now just on this, we can go into a very short commercial break, but once we return, we'll also take a listen to one last item of the day before we hand over to my colleague, the Michael Shaveri, to take us through the unpacking of the day.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina Omjo, Chicago Safas and Anana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuika Moshiwana, E. Moyao, Otaingo Samweni, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangeka, Saitanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupira, Mo Ikelefem Media House, Way 20 Meha Uka Kombanga Nina. Para un paso para aquí, huimos por yo mueve programa de tu Moambo, lengera selma, con ahora que estuvimos Datu, datu, jeari jamano tano, o andiach Eagle FM, so I
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omsea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
All right, it's 19 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to our last update of the day, is that the Ministry, or the Minister of Environment and Tourism in Indileni, Daniel, says hunting permits cannot be used to export horns or trophies. Now, Daniel stated that such an export is not permitted without the Ministry's prior written approval. Now, the declaration comes as the ministry formally launched the 2025 hunting season with a slew of rules aimed at promoting sustainable and controlled hunting activities. Now, on that, the cabinet approval, the ministry has confirmed that the hunting season for huntable game species will commence on 1st May 2025 and end on 31st August 2025. Now, this applies to commercial farms of not less than 1,000 hectares enclosed with registered game-proof fences and registered conservancies with approval quotas. Now, meanwhile, she said farms of the same size but enclosed will adequate livestock fencing will be allowed to hunt between 1st June and 31st July 2025. Now, on that, hunting in Namibia is regulated to ensure the conservation of our wildlife resources and to maintain ecological balance. Now, we urge all farmers, owners, conservators, and hunters to strictly adhere to the outlined regulation to avoid penalties. That what Daniel urged. Now, the hunting season also covered huntable game bird species with a specific period determined by non-breeding times, according to the ministry. Nathaniel said that those birds might only be hunted with written consent of the landowner, lease or conservancy committee, and only on the land not less than 1,000 hectares in size, enclosed with at least an adequate fence. Now, she also mentioned that hunters will be limited in the number of animals they may harvest. Now, the option include either three large game animals or a combination such as two large game or and four small game, or large game and eight small game, or a total of 12 small game animals. Now, on one kudu, might be hunted per individual during the entire season. The large game species consist of kudu, ox, while small game includes a springbok and warthog. Daniel also noted the importance of veterinary and biosecurity controls. Pre-approval from the Directorate of Veterinary Services is required for transporting with warthogs and for the export of any game meat or game bed products. And we must protect our livestock sector from possible disease transmission. She said. Now, on that, the ministry reiterated that game meat might not be transported from north of the veterinary cordon fence, and visiting hunters will not be allowed to import automatic firearms or headguns as per Namibia Police Regulation. Only hunting rifles and shotguns are permitted upon a presentation of a formal investigation letter. Invitation letter from the relevant landowner or conservancy. Now, Daniel said all hunting permit will be issued as exclusively to farm owners, lease or registered conservancy committee who must apply to on behalf of hunters. Each permit costs $100 Namibian and must be properly documented. Now, the white copy on that regard permit must remain with the hunter for the transportation and export of meat, while the blue copy must be returned to the ministry with the completed hunting record. Now, the minister also added that failure to report back to the permit officer might result in legal penalties and the suspension of future permit applications. Now, the ministry has also made it clear that no permit will be issued directly to any hunter. That's what the minister said. So also he said, we expect full cooperation from all stakeholders in ensuring that Namibia's hunting practices continue to serve both conservation and, of course, economic purposes in a responsible and legal manner. That what the ministry or the minister said on that regard. Now,
my friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political, or traditional.
For that, the time is 26 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock. And just lastly, before we hand over to the Demai Koshave, is that on one of the story again from our newspapers today is that despite the recent heavy rainfall and, of course, damp level nearing full capacity, wind remains gripped gripped by a water crisis that has persisted since mid-2023. Now, the city continues to operate under Category D, water scarcity, classified as a period of severe drought, according to latest monthly Water Watch report released by the city of Windhoek on Tuesday. Now, the city requires a 15% reduction in water use to meet demand, yet supply continues to fall short. Now, the situation stems from a declaration made by the municipal council in July 2024, marking that the onset of Category D water scarcity under this the City of Windhoek's Water Demand Response Index triggers a mandatory saving across the board, and residents and also businesses have been instructed to drastically cut back on consuming or consumption, and despite visual indicators such as overflowing dams suggesting otherwise. Now, the contradiction between water abundance and scarcity is most strictly seen in the city's dam level earlier this month, of the Avis Dam, once a dry basin was reported full. Now, on that regard, or rather to add on that, for the first time since 2011, the gate of sluice gates had to be open to manage the rising levels similarly. Now, the also other dams also are being opened in that regard. Near the Okahanja received over 6.6 million cubic meter of inflow in just 1 week, pushing its capacity to nearly 79%. Now, together with Swakopmund and Omatako, the three main dams supplying central Namibia held about 138 million cubic meters of water by 8 April, equivalent to 89.4% of their combined capacity. Now, that marks a stark and, of course, a construct to the 19.3% recorded a year earlier. Now, still, the abundance of surface water has not translated into relief for residents. Now, it said. Now, according to the NamWater, the state-owned bulk water supplier, the weekly supply currently stands at only 148,822 cubic meters, far below the projected weekly demand of 498,631 cubic meter. Now, this leaves a 30% supply deficit that cannot be budgeted by dam water alone. That's what we are getting. And, of course, lastly, to mitigate this shortfall, the city heavily relies on alternative sources, the Korea had water reclamation and plant, and of course underground reserve from the Windhoek aquifer, and reports indicate that NamWater is currently only able to meet about 30% of the city's water demand, and putting additionally pressure on those internal water resources. That what we're getting. And that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I wish you the best of also to listen ahead on the next program, that is Unpicking of the Day by Tate Mike Osha. Very from me, Lisa Shimi, it's a good day. Until the next time.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikao shafa sana na nongeshefa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyawo ota ingongo tisamweni anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika seitha nina omayakuro nilanditoma iwe yongeshefa yoyo kupitira mo Igelefe Media House ngwe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa letu Moambo, dengera selma, kodara heta tuimu. Datu, heari hamano tano, oni aj. Eagle FM, so high.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM.
Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the